She'll get what she deserves, said Mrs. Wells.
I should also like to get what I deserve, Francis.
It's dreary for you, waiting.
Frightfully.
Hmm.
Are you not tired of it also?
Well, I cannot show you off in the street as I would like.
How would you show me off?
Carver did not reply to this. After a short silence, he said, low,
You'll be Mrs. Carver soon.
I have set my sights upon it,
said Lydia Wells, and then nobody spoke for a long time.
Equinox, in which the lovers sleep through much commotion. George Shepherd directed Suk Yong Sheng's body to be brought into his private study at the police camp and laid out on the floor. The blacking on the man's chin and throat seemed all the more gruesome in death. Mrs. George, as the body was brought in, breathed very deeply, as though steadying herself internally against a wind. Carol Devlin, arriving from the police camp jailhouse, looked down at the body in shock. The hatter perfectly recalled the hermit, Crosby Wells, who had been laid out in this very way 2 months prior, on the very same sheet of muslin, in fact, his lips slightly parted, one eye showing a glint of white where the lids had not been properly closed. It was a moment before Devlin realized who the dead man really was.
"The shot was mine," said Shepherd calmly. "He was drawing his pistol on Carver, meaning to shoot him in the back, through the window. I caught him just in time."
Devlin found his voice at last.
"You couldn't have disarmed him?"
"No," said Shepherd. "Not in the moment. It was his life or Carver's."
Margaret Shepherd let out a sob.
"But I don't understand," Devlin said, glancing at her and then back at Shepherd. "What was he doing, drawing a pistol on Carver?"
"Perhaps you might clear up the chaplain's confusion, Margaret," said George Shepherd, addressing his wife, who sobbed a second time. "Reverend, I'll be wanting you to dig another grave."
"Surely his body ought to be sent home to his people," Devlin said, frowning.
"This one has no people," said Shepherd.
"How do you know that?" said Devlin.
"Again," said Shepherd. "Perhaps you ought to ask my wife."
"Mrs. Shepherd?"
said Devlin uncertainly. Margaret Shepherd gasped and covered her face with her hands. Shepherd turned to her.
"Compose yourself," he said. "Don't be a child."
The woman took her hands from her face at once.
"Forgive me, Reverend," she whispered,
without looking at him. Her face was very white.
"That's quite all right," said Devlin, frowning. "You're in shock, that's all. Perhaps you ought to lie down."
"George," she whispered.
"I consider that you did the ethical thing today," the jailer said, staring at her. "I commend you for it."
At this, Mrs. Shepherd's face crumpled. She clapped her hands over her mouth and ran from the room.
"My apologies," said the jailer to Devlin when she was gone. "My wife has a volatile temperament, as you can see."
"I do not fault her," Devlin said.
The relations between Shepherd and his wife troubled him extremely, but he knew better than to give voice to his fears.
"It is very natural to feel overcome in the presence of the dead, all the more so if one has a personal history with the deceased."
Shepherd was staring down at Suk Yong Sheng's body.
"Devlin," he said after a moment, looking up, "will you share a drink with me?"
Devlin was surprised. The jailer had never made such an invitation before.
"I would be honored," he said, still speaking carefully. "But perhaps we might go into the parlor, or out onto the porch, where we will not disturb Mrs. Shepherd's rest."
"Yes."
Shepherd went to his liquor cabinet.
"Do you have a taste for brandy or for whiskey?"
"I have both."
"Well," Devlin said, surprised again, "it's been an awfully long time since I had a drop of whiskey. Some whiskey would be very nice."
"Kirk Liston is what I have," said Shepherd, plucking out the bottle and holding it up. "It's tolerable stuff."
He stacked two glasses, swept them up into his great hand, and gestured for Devlin to open the door. The police camp courtyard was deserted, and chilly in the dark. All the buildings opposite were shuttered, their inhabitants abed. The wind had dropped at sundown, and it was almost perfectly quiet, the silence like the surface of a pond. The only sound came from the moths bumping against the glass globe that hung in a bracket beside the cottage door. There came a fizz of light each time a moth spiraled down into the flame, and then a dusty, acrid smell as its body burned. Shepherd set out the glasses on the banister rail and poured them both a measure.
"Margaret was my brother's wife," he said, handing one of the glasses to Devlin and draining the other. "My older brother, Jeremy. I married her after Jeremy died."
"Thank you," Devlin murmured, accepting the glass and holding the liquor to his nose. The jailer had been too modest. The whiskey was more than tolerable. In Hokitika, a bottle of Kirk Liston cost 18 shillings, and double that whenever spirits were scarce.
"The White Horse Saloon," the jailer was saying. "That was the name of the place. A dockside tavern at Darling Harbour. He was shot through the temple."
Devlin sipped at his whiskey. The taste was smoky and slightly musty. It put him in mind of cured meats and new books and barnyards and cloves.
"So I married his wife," Shepherd went on, pouring himself another measure. "It was the moral thing to do. I am not like my brother, Reverend, neither in temperament nor in taste. He was a dissolute. I do not mean to commend myself by contrast, but the difference between us was very often remarked. It had been remarked since our childhoods. I knew virtually nothing of his marriage to Margaret. She was a barmaid. She was not a beauty, as you know. But I married her. I did the dutiful thing. I married her and provided for her in her loss, and together we waited for the trial."
Devlin nodded mutely, staring at his whiskey, turning the small glass around in his hand. He was thinking of Sukyong Sheng lying cold on the floor inside, his chin and throat smeared with bootblack.